Hello, and welcome to More Than a Movie, the weekly show about films and filmmaking here on Campus FM. My name's Andrew Bonello, and along with the guest I'll welcome onto the show very shortly, we'll take a journey into the magical world of movies. Let's explore how films powerfully reflect real life's struggles and joys, making them so much more than just a movie. On this week's show, were you the cool kid at junior college? Did you take your high school sweetheart to the prom? Today's movies are madcap teenage comedies, chronicling the inevitably awkward fumblings of youth. Yes, we were all acne-ridden, hairy upper-lipped teenagers at one point or another, right? Well, I certainly was, anyway. Whatever your growing pains were, the point is that myriad challenges and problems besetting the teenage mind have fascinated storytellers for the ages. We'll pick a few movies from recent decades that detail said tragicomic deliberations with verve, panache, and laughs aplenty. Coming up a little later, a geeky teen philosophizes. If we can simulate particle physics on a computer, then why not do the same for a woman instead?
What's the difference? Why can't we simulate a girl?
I don't know. I guess I could, but why? It's,
you know, we can use it. Why? We can ask it questions. We can put it in real life sexual situations and see how it reacts. Like, we're sick. The man, he'd love it.
A frustrated high school belle asks daddy for permission to go on a date.
I am the only girl in school who's not dating.
Oh, no, you're not. Your sister doesn't date.
Is one simple rule.
Okay, you can date. When she does.
But she's a mutant. What if she never dates?
You'll never date. Oh, I like that.
And the temperature in a college dorm suite housing an unlikely trio of roommates reaches boiling point.
Is that normal? Three of us living together. I need a facial. I need to go on a diet. I need new shoes.
But before all that, let me begin by introducing our guest this week. Mike West is a well-known face in TV and print commercials around the Maltese Islands. In a performance career spanning over 10 years, he's appeared in various productions, both on TV, stage, and in films made here. And to talk about his experiences, his highs, and maybe even some of his lows, Mike joins me in the studio today.
Well,
Mr. West,
welcome. Hello, Andrew.
Welcome to the show, Mike. Great to have you here at last.
Yes.
Now, Mike, I was always told as a child that I've got a face for radio. In your case, dashing gentleman that you are, the situation is rather different. When did you first realize that you had the looks to be an actor?
Well, God bless you there, sir. God bless you. Thank you very much, Andrew. Thanks for a pleasure to be on your show. Lovely to be here. When did I first realize I had the looks? I still haven't realized I have the looks. I'm being utterly, when did I realize I had the looks? I don't think, I was, overly focused on looks. I was always trying to kind of avoid being about looks because I realized that, that was a perception people might have.
Okay.
And so I was hoping it wasn't about that. I'm always secretly hoping it's not about that. So I'm hoping really that there was some type of talent which shone through.
So let's move into that then. So do you okay. remember what yeah. experience as a kid made you sort of fall in love with the idea of performing?
Ooh. Oh, well, when I was a really small kid, my parents said, when I'd hear adverts, I'd jump up from behind the couch, and there was a particular advert, it was called Don't Cheat on the Cheese, and I jumped up from behind the couch and started saying, don't cheat on the cheese, don't cheat, and yeah.
So mimicking.
I was just mimicking, I was pretty much a mimicker, and then, as a kid or later on?
And even later, like, when did you start to take the possibility, like, more seriously that you could perform?
Yeah, okay, so the first film I was on was I was a props painter for Helen of Troy.
Okay.
And I was painting props, and on set they were asking for extras, and I was like, I could do that, yeah. And so I went over to there, covered in, like, paint, and they were like, no, you're not getting it. I didn't get it.
So you were working on the props,
I was
and then you
props.
Went, you wanted to go over and become sort of a member of the extras crew.
Yeah, and I sadly didn't get it, but I kept having, I wonder why, and I kept having dreams about being on set. And I remember I saw Sharon Stone, she was walking around the beach
okay.
in Golden Sands, and I was like, oh, wow.
Now, what film was that?
I have no idea, but she was there.
Okay.
And I, in my head, I believed This has completely not happened, but I've been telling everyone ever since. I believed she blew me a kiss, but
I'm sure she did. I kind of like
to believe it in my head. And anyway, and so I said, oh, okay. And that night I had a dream, surprisingly, about being on set again.
Okay.
And from then there was like Game of Thrones, which was advertised here. And then a friend of mine called Tanya, thank you, Tanya, pushed me into doing that. And that's how I started.
So what was your role on Game of Thrones?
I was a middle nobleman. Okay. On Game of Thrones, and from there they kind of said, oh, this guy's extremely enthusiastic, which I was like, hey, what are you doing? We're here. And so they made me a stand-in. Okay. And then I was a stand-in for there was Khaleesi's bodyguard.
Okay.
Really nice guy, and they threw me in the back of a van one time. Not threw me literally, but like I was in the back of a van one time, and he was there. And he was just a really sweet guy, and he was talking to a kid, trying to help him with his lines, and that was, it just blew my mind, because I loved film, and I loved, you know, I loved all this.
So you kind of got a taste for being on set with all these various productions
starting to shoot here. Yeah, it was such a magical place for me, because it was the first time being on set that I kind of felt like I was myself, you know, because it was kind of like a band of artistic gypsies, you know, who would just travel around, and everyone was kind of allowed to play, you know, instead of being in this very, I was in offices a lot of the time before, you know, and just trying to find my place, and I never felt at home. And so the films were the first place I kind of felt at home doing acting. And I got to give credit to, I'm not going to mention, but yeah, anyway, there was a Maltese actress who was performing, and I saw her on set. I saw her in a theatre performance in St. James, and I remember being like mystified by how amazing that looked. I was like, wow, you can perform and do that, and it looks so expressive and lovely. And that's, she got me into film.
You don't mention who that is?
I will, but I don't want to discredit her with like my inept abilities at acting, you know, so, but her name is Pippa, yeah. And she was great. She was like a really cool person. She looked to be really enjoying what she was doing. I was like, wow, that looks cool.
I want to do that.
I want to give it a shot. Yes.
Do you remember the first film you ever saw in a cinema, which really sort of spellbound you?
Yes. So when I was six, I was brought into the cinema in London, and we went to go and see The Hulk.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being extremely petrified. I was like, oh my God, there's a massive green monster, you know, and I remember hiding behind one of the seats, and yeah, that was my first experience.
So you found it sort of a frightening experience.
Yeah, well, that's probably not something I should relive, eh? But yeah, but that's what it was. It was an impactful experience.
Right, it stuck with you. Yeah,
and then yeah.
Well, that's great. So, Mike, listen, you've done a lot of community-like initiatives in Malta for film. So you've launched this Facebook group, Film TV Work Malta.
Yeah.
How big is the membership of that group now?
It's 20,000 members at the moment.
20,000 members.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Tell us a bit about that, how it happened.
Sure. So Jean-Pierre Bourge, who had started Filmed in Malta, mm-hmm. had a really cool group. And I kind of saw that and I was like, ah, wow, that's great. And he had started the community of that. And I said, perhaps there needs to be something specific to work, because a lot of the time the work was in newspapers and things like that, and it was very difficult to come by specifically work.
So this was an advertising forum for film work specifically?
Yeah, here. And so we needed kind of a forum for that to help kind of expand it. And I said, why don't I start that? And I asked Jean-Pierre, and he was like, why are you asking me, man? Of course, that's great, you know? Okay. And so we started that, and I think it's been helpful.
Well, it's grown a great deal. So for any listeners who are interested after listening to our episodes on the show and getting into maybe some film work, then it's definitely a group you should join, Film TV, yeah. TV Work Malta. Also, Mike, talking about your initiatives, you've had a few film meetups in here in Malta called the Island Film Gathering. I believe the last one was in 2019.
Yeah, I'm really chuffed for that, because I think it's a natural evolution of the group, where there was a lot of newer members who needed to find ways to kind of meet people, and there would occasionally people would ask, and it was just an evolution to how they could get into work, because they didn't know people and they didn't, you know, so we created it as a form of a networking event,
And what roughly happens at
so, these film yeah, gatherings? So we show we the idea is just to help promote the film community of people who are starting out and making films, and so we get any local filmmakers who'd like to showcase their films. We also have guest speakers, so we bring someone, say, you know, there was Michael Kissan came, and he spoke. We had an actor over there who spoke as well, and just so people can get feedback, they can ask questions, and they can interact, and they can meet each other. That's the whole point of it. Yeah, and it's useful just to make us create, make us make films, make us, you know, keep doing things.
That's awesome. Also, during the pandemic period, you had an initiative, Lights, Camera, Quarantine. How did that work?
Yeah. Okay, so everyone was kind of feeling a little bit frustrated. I got there was a bit of a down vibe during quarantine, and no one really knew what to do. And I said, oh, why don't we try and do this virtually? And so we did that. We came up with the idea of, we'll list all the different projects, the different roles. So director, like actor, you know, editing, what your interest is, they'll mark their interest, and then we'll kind of get everyone to work together and form little groups to make films from home.
I see. So they were working together, but not together, in the sense that they were working remote. The whole thing was
made all
remotely. Right.
Yeah. So we ended up having a bunch of scripts, and from the scripts, the producers and directors were chosen, and then they chose the scripts. And then I think we had in the end around six total films, which ended up getting made, which was brilliant. And from there, we did a little online live showcase in Film TV Work.
Right. You screened those films on a live session, I remember. And also worth saying, one of the films made during that initiative, The Soapbox, was shown in the cinema at Malta Indie Shorts in March of 2021.
Yeah, really good, that one.
Fantastic. Okay, Mike. Well, look, we're going to change pace just for a minute here. The show today is about teenage comedies, and I wanted to ask, do you have a movie falling into this little subgenre that you're particularly fond of?
Ooh. So, yeah. It's not like this was pre-scripted, but I would go and say Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey.
I have a feeling we're about to embark upon a most unprecedented expedition.
Once they made history.
I must see to it that you die.
Now, they are history. Bill and Ted are dead.
Welcome to hell.
It's the Grim Reaper, dude. How's it hanging, Death?
But they're having one hell of a time.
This is not what I expected this place to look like at all. We got totally lied to by our album covers, man.
So, from 1991, this is Peter Hewitt's comedy fantasy, starring, of course, Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter. And, Mike, what did you love about this film?
I think it was just very... It was, number one, it was very humble. It was this... I was a skater at the time, and it had this kind of California-esque...
Well, like you were a skateboarder.
I was a skateboarder at the time. And it had this kind of California-esque, kind of laid-back vibe to it. It was really sweet, really kind-hearted. It was about, you know, it was talking about the future. It had science fiction elements to it. It was funny. They were like really lovely actors, very nice relationship they had. There was really good comedians in it.
All right. Thank you for that recommendation, Mike. So talking a bit more now about your film work, I think you mentioned earlier you've done some stand-in and double work. You were a double for Christian Bale on The Promise, I believe?
Yeah. So I think I was a stand-in for him.
Okay, you were a stand-in.
No.
Explain the difference, cool, because I don't really know the
difference. There was another guy there who gave me like a little bit. Anyway, yeah. So I was a stand-in for Christian Bale.
What does that mean?
So a stand-in means you stand in. You basically stand there when he's out of scene, and you have the rough approximation of how he looks.
But do you stand in during shooting or during when the camera's rolling?
Yeah, so basically what a stand-in does is they set up the shot.
I see.
They set up how it looks, and they set up the shot. But I doubled for a couple of other people.
Okay, who did you double for?
I doubled for Rob Lowe, which was pretty cool. That's a cool one, because Rob Lowe's a good-looking man.
So, indeed, well, they're both good-looking men, but so to contrast this, you were a double for Rob Lowe where you did appear on camera as a double. Okay. Is that fair to say?
I did. Yes. I did. As a shot, yeah. But
So you're not, like, obviously they're not showing your face because your face isn't Rob Lowe's face, but your body is being used.
Well,
I mean, you are a good-looking chap, but Rob Lowe,
I'm joking.
So the movie was You, Me, and the Apocalypse, I believe?
That's right. Okay. And that was really cool. I had to speed off in boats. I had to... Yeah, it was the speedboat.
Okay, so shots, action shots.
Yeah, action shots. They threw me in there.
I see. You were playing his character when he was speeding around in the distance in boats.
And also when I had to kind of read lines occasionally, which was, I don't think... It's standard for the double, but they said, hey, Mike, could you just read these lines back? And I got a little too into it. You know, I was like, oh, wow, you were asking me to be the character, basically. And so, like, I was like, move out of here, Rob Lowe, I'm just going to do this. And
I'm taking over.
Do you sure you don't need Rob? You don't need me in this shot, you know? And so Rob was out, and then I... Rob was out, and I was in.
But did you get to meet Rob Lowe himself? Did you...
Can I just clarify? I didn't actually do the lines. I just read for...
I see. You were doing standard readings.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
And did you meet Rob Lowe?
I did meet him occasionally, but I was very starstruck, so I always found it very difficult. The only person I kind of talked to was Christian Bale, who was really... He was really sweet. He was like, okay, dude... You're out of shot, and I don't. He had an American accent at the time. I don't know why.
Right.
Or maybe it was just in my mind. You know, he's like a Hollywood guy, so he's gonna have. I just put it in there.
Okay.
But he was He tapped me out. He's like, tap out, bro. Here we go, or something like that.
Okay.
That,
so he sort of
He was smiling and nice, and he was like showed me the scene. I'm in now, and you're in then, and blah blah blah. And he was quite nice. And Joseph Fiennes. And said something sweet as well. He was nice.
So you were also a double for him?
I think it was a stand-in, but it's kind of dubious, because if worse comes to worse, they could probably throw us in.
Right.
I imagine,
and that was on the film Risen.
That was Risen.
For Joseph Fiennes.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Some very interesting work there.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so you also made a short film of your own.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that film.
So I made, my first film was, I made an improv film, which was called A Better Life, which was really fun to make.
What do you mean by an improv film?
So what we did is we had the characters, we had a rough outline of what was going to happen, but all the dialogue is just made up on the spot. So we would... kind of riff off each other.
You know? I see. So you had characters and backstory, but you didn't have a specifically written script with the exact
That's right. Yeah,
lines.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we did that, and then that was a little bit challenging. And then I made another film called Staked, which was a vampire short, and that with Joe. Joe Puello.
Paolella, I believe.
Paolella.
Something like that, yes.
Really good guy, and his good friends, Anthony Mitzi, awesome people, really, really good people. And that got into Love Immortal, which was really cool, was surprising. But the first one, the first improv one, was something I'd like to do again, because people just said I was really bad.
People said it was really bad.
No. A couple of people were like, oh my God, you should never direct again, man. You should, this is it. You're done.
Gosh.
And I was like, okay, I'm done. I put it on Reddit, and people were like, oh, this is horrific.
Really? Awful. So you didn't get very positive feedback.
But then, from a number of people, they loved it. They were like, oh, wow, this is very, very good. You know, and it was, we showed it at the festival there, and it was like a massive laugh. You know, everyone was like laughing. They're like, oh, it's great. And, you know, but... And I feel bad for the actors who gave themselves to the part, because they really did an amazing job and they're so good at what they did. And everyone said how good they were. They were very good. But so what I'm going to do is going to give it another shot as an improv film. I'm going to try and do that again, because I think you shouldn't.
And I presume that, even if the feedback you got wasn't sort of, you know, completely over the moon, you probably learnt a great deal making the film.
Yeah, I learnt a great deal, and I learnt that it doesn't really matter, like, at the end of the day, what people think, because you do it for yourself. And I learnt an enormous amount, and I really just have a massive urge to do another one. I've got a really, really massive, and I'm talking to some people And it's just fun. It's fun to have friends there and make stuff, and it's just great. And I think the next one will be really lovely. And the first one was great as well. People laughed a lot, which was lovely.
And it's always a process, right, of evolution and learning.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It was my first.
So tell us, Mike, is there a film experience or a film performance that you're particularly proud of?
Ooh, okay. Yes, there is. So the experience I'm proud of was getting, and I tell all the people, is the Michael Bay film I got onto. We got auditioned for that.
This is 13 Hours.
13 right? Hours, yeah. And a friend of mine said, hey, Mike, you should really wear something super American. So I wore like a baseball top and stuff, like, because I know he's Californian.
Okay.
And I super Californian'd it up, you know, when I went into the audition. And we had to do it in an American accent.
Okay.
And he was going to actually, he said, why don't we cast him for like this other part? And I found out like the part was like, he had to be bald.
The character
had to be bald. And I'm like, there's no way I'm shaving my head.
What?
Like, vanity has taken like hold here. There's no way.
You had your chance to be in a Michael Bay movie in a major role, and you didn't want to shave your head.
And the actor who got it, I got the part. I got like a lesser part, but the actor who got it, and I doubt I would have got it because he's a terrific actor. But he got to the premiere in LA. It was, you know, he did really well, and yeah, so that was a bit of a regret.
Interesting.
But we did end up like being on set with some really lovely people. We just hung around. We ate from a pancake bar.
It was a pretty big production, I guess, right?
And there was one thing with Michael Bay, which was because he gave me some glasses. So the costume lady was the costume lady for Titanic.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, wow, I'm going to get dressed by the costume lady for Titanic. And she ended up making me really nerdy. Like exceptionally nerdy. I'm like, wait, I'm a lot more
it was a character.
Badass than this.
It was a character.
I know, but, you know. And so I was like, how can I work these glasses? Because she'd given me some glasses. And I was like, really, me? You're going to give me the glasses? But I was like, okay, yeah. You know, I deserve the glasses. And so I went on set, and I started playing with the glasses, fiddling with the glasses. And he just came out the blue, like with the, I think he had a speakerphone. He's like, start playing with the glasses.
Okay.
Like,
didn't,
that's all
he didn't like
over fiddle. And over again. He's start fiddling with the glasses. I hate fiddling with the glasses. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to fiddle with the glasses. And then I think it was like 2 weeks in, I kept on fiddling with the glasses. And the second AD just appeared out of smoke. Like, it just, and just wafting towards me, took the glasses in his hand off my face and just disappeared. And I never saw him again. Yeah.
Right.
And he said, I never want to effing see those glasses ever in my life again or something like that. Yeah, so that's...
So some interesting on-set experiences for you, Mike, for sure.
Yes, quite a few. Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this question then, Mike. If you had the funds to make a feature film, any feature you wanted, no holds barred, no budgetary restrictions, do you have any thoughts about what kind of a film you'd want to make?
Yes, so I think the number one, I think in Hollywood, there's such an enormous amount of money spent on utter... And
not very good films.
Okay. And so that could be utilized so much more effectively. I mean, you know, and so I would make something which is beneficial to mankind in some ways. It would help people promote like good ideas and positive like thoughts and ideas, and make it, you know, spend a lot of time on writing, you know, that would be the majority of the time would be spent on the actual writing of a good script.
And what kind of story, what kind of genre would you get in?
So I would definitely go for something like a mythical sci-fi. I was thinking, I have something in mind which I was thinking of doing here in Malta, but something kind of mythical and sci-fi. And I think sci-fi is very good because it kind of promotes the future and the idea of how we can live our lives currently and how we'd like to see, you know, the future. And a comedy.
Okay, so it would be a sci-fi...
Mythical comedy.
Mythical comedy. Wow.
With a good heart, and which would have... And it has to have a good heart, you know?
Right.
And I think... Yeah, that's what I would like.
I mean, and are you at the stage at the moment, have you got a story sort of fleshed out for that, or is it something more at the concept stage, or...?
Well, I actually have a story in mind.
I'm not saying tell us the story now, if you don't want to, obviously, but...
No, but I have a story in mind, but I think it would need a lot more of the elements I just discussed with you now, and I would need to flesh it out and kind of better create it, but I think... Honestly, for anyone out there who's thinking of making films, I think if you really are passionate And one of the things I did with A Better Life, which is what I liked a lot, was that it was just a group of friends helping each other. And I've got to give it up for Clint Camilleri, because he's the guy who helped me get that made.
He shot the film.
Yeah, he shot the film, and also Martin Bonici. Clint stayed with me for a year solid, editing, pulling his hair out. That's why he has barely any hair left. No, he does. He has a lot of hair. But he helped me, and he was a very good man. And Martin Bonici from Shadina, who always helps students and people willing to succeed. So there are people out there who are very, very helpful. And he gave me a studio for close to a year, you know, to paint. I think it was over a year. I painted parts of it, and he lent me all the things just to get it made. So if you want to make something, you can.
But the impression I'm getting, and I've experienced this with my work in film as well, is like getting a film made, even a short film, is a huge effort, right? It's a huge undertaking,
yeah.
A lot of collaboration,
yeah.
A lot of struggle.
Yeah.
So it's good to have people to,
yeah,
to
yeah.
spot you and
yeah.
support you, isn't it?
It's good to have other passionate people involved who really want to get something done, yeah.
Fantastic. All right, Mike. Well, this was this was very interesting. Thank you for sharing some of your experiences and insights with us. Mike, if people, we've already mentioned your Facebook group. If people are interested in learning a bit more about you yourself and the work you're doing, is there a place they can go online to do that?
So, well, you can contact me on Mike West on Facebook, mm-hmm. and there's my group there, film/TV Work Malta, and it's the larger one because they've done two copies of it. Or you can find me on Instagram, and it's Mike Think of a Good Name. That's the actual name.
That's your Instagram handle.
Handle, Mike Think of a Good Name.
Terrific.
Cheers, and thank you. Thank you, Andrew and Jordy, for doing such an amazing show. It's very pleasure, big pleasure to be here.
Mike, it was a pleasure having you on the show. We wish you the very best of luck, and we really hope we'll be seeing lots more of your work, both on and off screen, yep. hopefully on a Cineplex big screen near us soon.
So can I just, and big, big thank you to Julia Calvert, who gave me my first shot on Melita advert. That's the one that started me out doing ads, and thanks for all those people who have given me work so far. Really, really appreciate it.
Good shout out, Mike. Good luck with everything. Thanks again. Now then, what about teen comedies that were shot here in Malta? Well, I dug deep on this one, and alas, my research didn't turn up all that much. Widening the search a little, though, to comedy, from 2012, we have Asterix and Obelix, God Save Britannia, which sees the Gallic comedy hero cross the English Channel to help second cousin Anticlimax face down Julius Caesar and his invading Romans. Starring veteran Gérard Depardieu, this is an all-French production, but it does feature a few characters attempting to speak French in a British accent, not least of which, the Queen.
Je me demande si nous pourrons résister éternellement.
Il existe pourtant un village qui a réussi cet exploit.
Truly cringe-worthy attempts at French there. Well, this is one I've not seen, but the comedy does appear to be very much of the madcap, zany, Looney Tunes slapstick variety, with lots of CG effects adding to the visual mayhem. It was shot in various countries throughout Europe, by the way, with the Malta film tanks in Kalkara being used for the pirate ship scenes. So if pratfalls and physical comedy are your thing, then you might want to slap this thick slice of roast beef on your Barbie. Well, let's now venture beyond the swimsuit-strewn shores of Malta to discover truly awkward teenage comedy fumblings. Our first film today tells the story of two desperate American teens who combine their whiz kid techie know-how with a very famous horror story to invent the answer to their hormonal rumblings.
Okay, look, you know how you're always talking about how you can simulate all that stuff on your computer? You know? What's the difference? Why can't we simulate a girl?
I don't know. I guess I could, but why? It's two-dimensional on the screen. It's not flesh and blood, Gary.
Well, I know that, but, you know, we can use it, Wire. We can ask it questions. We can put it in real-life sexual situations and see how it reacts. Like, we're sick. The man, he'd love it.
Well, what about your girl in, Canada?
She was in Canada. This girl's no morals. You know, I don't like that on a girl. It's rough having that kind of relationship, you'll see. Anyway, get to work.
From 1985, this is Weird Science. John Hughes, a prolific screenwriter as well as a director, was a true veteran of 80s and 90s Hollywood comedies, helming several big hits during that era. Indeed, he made two other famous teen comedy films just before directing Weird Science, both really well known. Those were 16 Candles and, of course, The Breakfast Club, which starred, amongst others, Anthony Michael Hall. And he headlines here in Weird Science as one of our haplessly undersexed teenaged protagonists. He and his friend waste no time updating the grisly creation of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein to employ then-modern 1980s computer technology. And in no time at all, they bring their dream woman to life.
She's alive! Alive!
So, what would you little maniacs like to do first?
Kelly LeBrock, the famous model, does a fine job here as the focus of these young lads' affection, taking on a role that's actually less seductress, really, and more well-meaning mother figure to the boys. Other famous faces who were still early in their careers appear here, including, yes, Robert Downey Jr., no less. But top druthers really have to go to the late and wonderfully great Bill Paxton, who pretty much steals every scene he's in this film, playing the role of the brutish older brother.
You stewed, buttwad!
Me?
Know what time it is?
Two?
Time to pay the fiddler.
I was kind of counting on you to be human about this.
Here's the bottom line, Wyatt. I'm telling Mom and Dad everything.
Well, it's been said that Paxton's performance here got him the role of Hudson in James Cameron's superb sci-fi action sequel Aliens, released in the following year, 1986. In that film, Paxton does dial it down a little in an iconic sidekick role, but there's much taken from his hilarious turn as older brother Chet from here in Weird Science. Paxton's having an absolute ball looking down on the desperate drunken antics of his little brother and his pal.
The booze hounds return. What a joke. Hi, girls. How about a nice, greasy pork sandwich served in a dirty ashtray? He pukes. You die.
To be sure, this is John Hughes' most eclectic and surreal teen comedy compared to his first two, drawing as it does on many sci-fi genre staples. And regular listeners will know that we love that here on the show. LeBrock's Lisa talks the duo into holding a wild party in their parents' house when the cat's away and all of that.
It's all in the name of science. Weird science.
If you want to be a party animal, you have to learn to live in the jungle.
Not us.
Not here. No way.
She is turning their lives.
Trust me for once, will you?
What is going on?
Harry, I don't know you.
I don't know him.
Their minds. And their house. Upside down.
It's seriously affecting your sex life.
And the climax of the movie really does get into major wackadoodle territory. At one point, the special effects team appear to fire a grand piano up and out of the house's chimney, high up into the air, and into a pool in the garden. It's actually very good effects and production design for the era. Those effects lend what's actually a rather sweet and touching coming-of-age story with a very vibrant visual signature. It somehow blends seamlessly with the constant visual gags and comedic character performances. Of course, I saw this as a kid back in the day, but revisiting it recently, I was reminded of what an accomplished genre comedy this still is, with very decent performances and an undeniably 80s aesthetic. Note also that in the mid-90s, a TV sitcom of the same name was made, based on the movie. I can't speak to the TV show, but I can thoroughly recommend the zany original teen comedy movie that is Weird Science.
It's completely unnatural.
Do you realize it's snowing in my room?
Totally unbelievable.
What's going on?
And definitely weird.
Hey, dudes.
They went from zeros to heroes in one fantastic weekend.
That's so good.
Universal Pictures presents a John Hughes film, Weird Science.
It's purely sexual.
Talking about a sheer, unadulterated 80s feel, check out this delightful synth-pop madness from the soundtrack of Weird Science, performed, I kid you not, by American new wave band Oingo Boingo.
From my heart and from my hand, why don't people understand my intention?
So at that, it's on to our next awkward teen comedy movie for today. Stuart and Eddie are roommates, but when Alex moves into the second room in their college dorm suite, the match isn't exactly one made in heaven.
It's a co-ed dorm. What's the problem?
It's co-ed within the buildings, not within the rooms.
So?
So the polite thing for you to do is go down to the housing office, tell them there's been a mistake, and they need to get you boys new rooms.
No, we were here first. Besides, it's your fault. Why didn't you use Alexandria, or whatever your full name is?
Alex is my full name.
Well, it sounds like a man's name to me.
I think it's lovely. Wow, she's amazing.
From 1994, this is Threesome. On the surface, this one looks rather like a trite American high school caper, which, at some level, I suppose it is. But don't let appearances deceive you. Director Andrew Fleming cast Josh Charles to star alongside Lara Flynn Boyle, probably best known for her role as Donna Haywood in David Lynch's surreal TV mystery, Twin Peaks. Staying with Threesome, though.
You could call my junior year in college an experiment in living.
Sure. One, two, three.
Having one roommate was okay, but having two roommates was totally unexpected.
If you don't stop eating my yogurt, I'm gonna kill you.
You make murder sound so sexual.
The trio is rounded out by Stephen Baldwin. Aha, now there's a name that should ring a few bells, eh? By some margin, a lesser-known brother of Hollywood powerhouse actor Alec Baldwin, Stephen, nonetheless, has worked steadily as a film actor since the late 80s, and that right through even into 2021. Granted, he's not had that many meaty lead roles over the years. His most memorable turn, though, must surely be in Bryan Singer's superb 1995 mystery thriller, The Usual Suspects, a film that really merits a discussion all unto itself, no doubt. Here in Threesome, Baldwin completes a small ensemble that's notable for the strong chemistry that the director allows to develop between the lead characters. Despite its at times brazen humor, this film actually tells a quite serious and surprisingly prescient story about libidinous awakening, and indeed, about sexual orientation. There's a lot more going on here than the clips might belie.
I think I was especially stricken. I thought that if Stuart and Alex could have been genetically merged into one person, he or she would have been the love of my life.
I think not.
I promise you'll enjoy yourself just slowly and just for a second.
No.
Just for a second. Right there.
Okay, all right, stop. Okay, I understand. Okay, that's enough. Stop.
Stop it. Let go. Let go, let go, let go!
Baldwin, in particular, is having an absolute riot in this performance. Terrific stuff. With hilarious erotic moments in such unlikely settings as the college library, no less, the frequent outbursts in the film do a surprisingly candid job of expositing a more adult perspective. Yes, that, even if it's really all about the inevitably juvenile journey of sexual awakening that we go through as young adults.
Sex, it's like pizza. Even if it's bad, it's still pretty good.
Larry, this is Eddie and Stuart.
Hi.
It's about his hair. Is it fiberglass or steel?
I find libraries very erotic.
This girl, she is a live wire of sexual energy.
The whole world is screaming at you. Why would you kiss me?
You just look at my butt. He is what he is.
He doesn't know what he is. He's confused.
He's not confused about my butt.
Is that normal? Three of us living together. I need a facial. I need to go on a diet.
Really, this is a very well-acted comedy. Lara Flynn Boyle is pretty sensational as the perpetually unrequited love-struck hopeful. And Josh Charles, arguably the protagonist of the story, interjects the narrative with several surprisingly effective voiceovers, told in retrospect as we see events unfold before us.
Stuart went home for the summer and moved to another dorm in the fall. I noticed that he never seemed quite the same after that episode in the bathroom. We all tried to keep in touch, but you know how it is.
Really then, this is an American teen comedy, to be sure, but at heart it's also a very solid self-discovery drama, and a vastly underrated one at that. So if you're fed up of the brazen, crass, and ultimately vacuous comedies that we honestly see far too much of nowadays, then you could do much worse than visiting the very poignant teen dramedy that is Threesome.
Musketeers. Oh, just one big happy family.
For the three of us together, the improbable became possible.
Maybe this should just be our secret.
Don't tell Storm. I know something that you don't.
What did you say?
And the possibilities were endless.
And a quick interlude now from the soundtrack of the movie Threesome. Here's Dancing Barefoot, produced and performed by U2.
She is a benediction. She is addicted to heat. She is the root connection. And she is connecting with me. Here I go and I don't know why I spin so ceaselessly. Could it be he's taking over me? I'm dancing barefoot, headed for spin. Some strange music drags me in. It makes me come out like some sublimation. She is the essence of me. She is concentrating on him who is chosen by she. Here I go and I don't know why I spin so ceaselessly. Could it be he's taking over?
Next for today, then. The most popular teenage girl at school is forbidden from going on a date unless her older sister does, too.
There's a difference between like and love. Because I like my Skechers, but I love my Prada backpack.
Bianca Stratford is the most popular girl at Padua High.
You're asking me out?
I'm down. I've got the 411, and you are not going out and getting jiggy with some boy. I don't care how dope his ride is.
Her sister, Kat, is something else entirely.
People perceive you as somewhat tempestuous. Heinous witch is the term used most often.
From 1999, this is 10 Things I Hate About You. Listeners who love to read The Bard might have been amused by the introduction, noting that the story here is loosely based upon Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew, featuring, as it does, a central pair of sisters who couldn't be more unlike one another.
The only thing they have in common...
I am the only girl in school who's not dating.
Oh, no, you're not. Your sister doesn't date.
...is one simple rule.
Okay, you can date. When she does.
But she's a mutant. What if she never dates?
And you'll never date. Oh, I like that.
For Cameron,
no one will go out with her.
It's a problem.
And what about him? I heard he ate a live duck once.
So you two are gonna help me tame the wild beast.
Absolutely.
Director Gil Younger enlists fine support from established adult actors here, including Oscar winner Allison Janney and the hilarious Larry Miller. Now, this is an older comedy, but you'll recognize several young faces that went on to great adult careers in film. An unbearably cute Joseph Gordon-Levitt here sports a voice that's barely even broken yet. A young Julia Stiles does very fine work as the hard-edged older sibling. And, of course, we had a breakout role here from Heath Ledger, the Australian an actor famed for his 2008 performance in Christopher Nolan's third Batman movie, The Dark Knight. Tragically, Ledger died shortly after filming of The Dark Knight wrapped, and that was a role for which he ultimately received a posthumous Academy Award, the Best Actor Oscar. Back to our teen comedy, then.
It's a widely known fact that the Stratford sisters aren't allowed to date.
Every girl who's ever hoped.
Daddy, as you know, it's the prom.
And anyone.
You're concentrating awfully hard considering it's gym class.
Who's ever been taken completely by surprise.
You're not as vile as I thought you were.
10 Things I Hate About You.
Well, rather like the other teen comedies we're discussing today, there are moments of brash, genital-centric humor dotted throughout this erstwhile high school yarn. But again, like the other films, there's a solid narrative underpinning it all, and one which actually tips the movie into romance territory also. It includes a scene with a cute public serenade when our handsome suitor grabs a microphone at the college football stadium.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You'd be like heaven to touch. I wanna hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived. And I thank God I'm alive. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you.
The film's not afraid to delve into the more serious aspects of high school heartbreak either. In what could be seen as a nod to the film's inspiration, Shakespeare, let's listen to this moment in a poetry class, when our reluctant heroine volunteers to read out her latest soliloquy.
I hate the way you talk to me and the way you cut your hair. I hate the way you drive my car. I hate it when you stare. I hate your big dumb combat boots and the way you read my mind. I hate you so much it makes me sick. It even makes me rhyme. I hate it. I hate the way you're always right. I hate it when you lie. I hate it when you make me laugh. Even worse when you make me cry. I hate it when you're not around and the fact that you didn't call. But mostly I hate the way I don't hate you. Not even close. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
So, yes, once again, we have a sincere and moving high school yarn here, and a well-made one at that. Note that in 2009, this film, like Weird Science, was also the inspiration for a TV sitcom show of the same name. Be sure to start with this movie version, though. It's arguably treading some of the same ground as 1995's Alicia Silverstone hit, Clueless, itself based on another literary classic, Emma, by Jane Austen. I'd argue, though, that 10 Things I Hate About You strikes the perfect balance between brash teenaged hijinks and coming-of-age storytelling. Highly recommended.
Touchstone Pictures presents a story for every guy who's ever tried.
You never give up, do you?
Was that a yes?
No.
Well, then was that a no?
No.
Every girl who's ever hoped.
This is not good.
And anyone who's ever been taken completely by surprise.
She kissed me.
Where?
In the car.
10 Things I Hate About You.
Finally for today, then, a jaded man visits his hometown for Christmas, but comes face to face with his high school crush and best friend of yesteryear. That was a woman who, when she rejected him, turned our flawed hero into a ferocious womanizer.
God, I love my life!
You're awesome!
Those are awesome!
Music producer Chris Brander has it all.
I saw you flirting with me out there.
How did you do that to your boyfriend?
We're just friends.
But in high school, things were a little different.
From 2005, this is Just Friends. Well, it's hard to talk about modern teen comedies without mentioning how Ryan Reynolds got his start. An accomplished A-list actor in dramas right through to superhero movies today, Reynolds really started out in the teen comedy niche. And there were several possible film choices here. Arguably, the film that shot him to fame was 2002's National Lampoon's Van Wilder, a very crude but undeniably fun comedy. And here in Just Friends, toilet humor takes a bit of a backseat, allowing amusing family and relationship dynamics to instead take center stage.
10 years later, touring with the world's hottest pop star.
God, I want to lick your skin off.
We'll take him home for the holidays.
Hi, Mom.
This is my brother, Mike.
You're hot.
I know.
Now, when he sees the girl he never forgot,
Jane,
he's going to get a second chance.
Oh, my God. I can put my arms around you.
To win his first love.
Wow, Chris.
Jamie Palomino.
Set in a timeline with our characters as adults, the film repeatedly flashes back to a childhood friendship, with Reynolds in a hilariously implausible overweight bodysuit and makeup as the hopelessly love-struck best friend.
Jamie, we've been friends for a really long time, but I want to be more than that. Oops, I don't think so. Hoping to be your boyfriend. Sincerely, Chris Brander. BFF.
And I swear, by the moon and the stars in the sky, I'll be there.
I have to say, this is just such a fun performance from Reynolds. It's a role which maximizes his natural comedic talents, whilst also letting him do a bit of more serious acting. Director Roger Cumble brings together a talented supporting cast, including a brilliantly overzealous Anna Faris, Stephen Root on fine comedy form, Chris Klein, and a hilarious turn from Chris Marquette as the younger brother. He and his long-lost older siblings spend much of the movie expressing love and affection for one another as only brothers truly can.
Yes, because I love sentimental tearjerkers.
I'm gonna friggin' puke.
Just a second.
You're so dead, do you hear me?
Whatever, dude, I think she left you hanging.
It's probably just an important business call. Get off the phone.
What, the bar ran out of curly fries?
Get on the phone.
Dude, are you gonna boink Jamie tonight?
Yes. Are you happy now?
All right.
Mom! Mom! Rose!
Like most of our films today, the comedy here complements a heartfelt story, in this case about a young boy condemned to the friend zone by his would-be high school sweetheart. And, of course, having to face the inevitable ridicule of a brutal frat boy community when you're an uncool outcast.
Chris, we need to talk about what you wrote. Is that really how you feel?
I don't know. Maybe. Why?
Because that's the nicest thing anyone's ever written me.
What?
Yes. I love you, Chris. Like a brother.
we're friends, right?
For sure.
Heartbreaker duties are taken on by the lovely Amy Smart, a very capable American actress who I've often felt deserved far better roles than she's received, though in fairness, I'm not quite up to date on her more recent filmography. Here in Just Friends, she's a delight, in a role with a surprising amount of dramatic depth. As an adult, then, here's the moment our cynical, damaged ladies man, back in his hometown, first reunites with his best friend from high school, played by Amy Smart.
Jamie. Jamie?
Chris! Hi!
Hi! What are you doing down there?
Oh, I'm just busted. How are you? Hold on. Wow! Look at you! Oh.
To be sure, there are comedic asides aplenty to be enjoyed here. Lots of physical comedy, set pieces, and even fun antics on the ice hockey pitch, given that the hometown locale is in snowy upstate New Jersey. Overall, then, this is essentially a teen comedy that, despite frequent tangents into zany humor and slapstick pratfalls, actually tells a touching story about a wounded person finally opening up to the painful childhood memories he's locked away. Be sure not to spit out your milkshake or gag on your toothpaste, then, as you enjoy Just Friends.
Jamie Palomino!
Dusty Dinkelman?
I can't compete with this guy. You see him play that guitar? It's like he has 15 fingers.
Nice outfit, by the way. Rock and roll.
That is so cute! I just want to eat you both up!
New Line Cinema presents...
Not the same person I was in high school, pal.
You'll always be fat to me, Chris.
Well, as we wrap up for today, if you've listened to previous episodes of More Than a Movie here on Campus FM, you might remember that in Season 1 we discussed at least two other movies that also surely fall into the teen comedy category. 1985 was a big year for teen comedies then, because in episode 9 of our first season, there was Richard Donner's cult classic The Goonies, in which a group of young misfits discover an ancient map. They set out to find a legendary pirate's long-lost treasure, getting into all sorts of trouble on the way.
Hey kid, I want you to spill your guts, tell us everything.
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 Everything. Okay, I'll talk. In third grade, I cheated on my history exam. In fourth grade, I stole my Uncle Max's toupee and I glued it on my face when I played Moses in my Hebrew school play. In fifth grade, I knocked my sister 80,000 stairs and I blamed it on them sending me to a summer camp for fat kids. And then once during lunch, I got nuts and I pigged out and they kicked me out.
And way back in the very first episode ever of the show, also from 1985, we have Joe Dante's wonderful and heartfelt sci-fi love letter, Explorers. A recurrent childhood dream leads a trio of teens to build a makeshift craft that launches them into outer space.
I just had one of those dreams again.
Oh, there's over this giant circuit board or something. I can take a look at it tomorrow, okay?
We have our own spaceship.
So, what did you think of the movie selection today? For that or any other feedback, please email us at morethanamovieqs@gmail.com. That's morethanamovieqs, all one word, @gmail.com. This More Than a Movie episode was written and presented by me, Andrew Bonello. A big thanks to our guest, Mike West, for joining us today. And also, of course, to our illustrious sound engineer today, Jordi De Bono. The intro music was Creepy Comedy, and the outro is Inspiring Teaser, both by Raphael Crux at filmmusic.io, and those clips are licensed under creativecommons.org, version 4. Thanks for listening, and I do hope you'll join us again next week for another episode of More Than a Movie.